Welcome back to another episode of the Huxley Morton podcast, the show where each week Adam and I are joined by pharma company owners, industry leaders, innovators, and people that, I guess, yeah, trying to progress the world of clinical research and clinical trials. Today, we are joined by Anna Titkova. Anna, you are one of the directors from Protea. And I guess I'll let you give us a bit of an introduction, but I know that you are actually based over in Ukraine, which perhaps we can talk about a lot more on the show. But I've given you a very quick intro there. Give us, in your own words, an overview as to your role and what Protea are doing as a company.
Yeah. Hello, James. Hello, Adam. Thank you for having me here. And thank you very much for your interest, for your willingness to speak about Ukraine in these conditions and this situation that we have this month. It will be exactly 1 year of this horrible reality, a year when all our hours, days, and months are one terrible day forever. But each day it's hard, of course, to see this light, to see this hope. But all of Ukrainians, we each time take this deep breath and start again, because we know that we have people outside of Ukraine, such people as you, such people that will be listening to our podcast today, who give us this hope, give us this light for our future. And you are our source of this energy, of our fuel, to not to give up, to continue to work and to survive and win in the end. So thank you very much again. And yeah, a few words about myself. I'm a Ukrainian citizen. Let's start from this point. I'm a medical professional. On my first specialty, I'm a doctor, PhD, scientific worker of medical academy. And several years ago, I started my activities in clinical researches, and with another outstanding event in our world, like the COVID pandemic, exactly after it was announced in the world, I registered two companies on the territory of Ukraine, Protea Ukraine, and our own clinical research site, Protea Clinic Ukraine. And our activity is mostly, or the whole its volume, focused on the conducting clinical researches on the territory of Ukraine. During this period of time of these 2 years of 2021st and 22nd years, we worked on the base of affiliated sites, some state or public and private hospitals, where we provide services and clinical researches. And at the same time, we built from the scratch full functioning medicals, our own medical center that performs clinical researches and in parallel private visits for patients. In general, Protea is an international company, and we're operating in 6 different countries throughout Europe, and have this global headquarters located in Poland, but at the same time, a lot of people from 6 countries, and we're working all together in this network and combination of our resources, efforts, to give maybe the main mission of our industry, this approach and access of patients to innovative medicines.
Wow, you almost lost me then. I know that it was a very, very long answer. But look, so to try and pin things down here, because there's so many different types of organization involved with clinical research. In terms of Protea as a business entity, are you more like a site network or a clinical research organization? How would you classify yourself in terms of type of company?
Site management organization. So the network of sites throughout 6 European countries.
Perfect. Okay. That makes sense. And look, in terms of this, I know that you touched upon it there and talked about your own medical background, but one area that Adam and I always start on the show is, I guess, how you first got into the world of clinical research. Was this something that you wanted to do when you were a young girl growing up? Was it as a result of, family, friends working in this line of work? How did you come across it?
Yeah, it was my childhood dream to become a doctor. This was the main goal and direction to which I was looking forward and making all the steps and attempts to achieve. And it was like medical university, residence, master degree in medicine, PhD, professor title, scientific work in medical university. And at the same time, as in the majority of countries, all scientific workers, they combine their activities with clinical researchers. And I was a part of a research team, the sub-investigator, work with principal investigator there. And yeah, all these activities, working with some CROs, SMOs on the local market, then pushed me to have this more international communication, international relations with mm-hmm. people. And in 2019, it was a new acquaintance with people from Pratia. And yeah, I'm lucky that it was such a chance in my life when I can combine what I love really with these activities that I was able to fulfill and to show in my business. Yes, yeah, Steve mm-hmm. Jobs said that you have to do a great job, you need to love what you do. And this was my, and is my love of my life, which I was putting inside the building of business on the territory of Ukraine.
Awesome stuff. And as far as I understand, you are now the country head, country manager for Pratia Ukraine. But you mentioned that as a business, you're operating in several European countries. I heard Poland, and several others. But look, let's get down to, I guess, probably what a lot of people want to know. And that is about your own business, perhaps in the Ukraine and running things from the Ukraine, because I guess as a site management organization, you know, sites are where people typically have to go. You know, this isn't the world of, you know, decentralized trials, everyone working remotely, being able to just very quickly offshore things. So how have you been managing things over the past 12 months? I mean, you mentioned that it's, you know, almost kind of a year to the day almost that the war in Ukraine has been going on. So how have you been managing this? What systems and things have had to be put in place in order for you to continue business?
Yeah, honestly speaking, no one was expected and accepted in the end of this situation, because it was like something unpredictable that was not, we were not prepared, the whole world maybe, and the whole country was not prepared to have such a disaster, the war on the territory of the sovereign, net independent country in the middle of Europe almost. And yeah, but you know that a lot of things were mentioned before the war started in January and February. We heard a lot from this TV, from internet sources that it's going to be. And as being a big international organization, of course, I received some questions, some risk management plans, or some notes from our global departments with this question, what we will do, how we will do this. But for me, it was something like to say, yeah, you're crazy guys, we're not going to have all these questions that you mentioned that we need to answer what we will do. It will not happen, it's not possible. But of course, we had some this communication with this our colleagues, because maybe I didn't mention it before, Prati is a part of the big holding, Nauka Group, that is public listed company with a lot of entities inside, pharmaceutical industry, sales, pharma sales, chemistry, and so on. And this part of clinical researchers is one part only of this big, huge company. That's why we had a lot of these departments that help us in managing our business in general, in normal time, and now in different countries. And of course, I had this communication, and we were speaking with our colleagues from risk management department, from other department of our holding, of our Nauka group. But it, of course, it was like far away from us, and like an imagination that will never come to the reality. Of course, at 4:45 a.m. on the 24th of February, when everything started, it was like this urgent actions that should be performed, and exactly from my side as well. And for me, the main maybe items, directions on which I should pay this my attention were our staff, our obligations as a company, because we had as each company running contracts, some obligations that you need to perform to your customers, and the set one patients that were already in clinical researches on the base of our sites and hospitals where we're operating. First idea was to pay the salary for people for February, because it was almost the end of the month and we do not know whether internet connection, telephone connection will be in place and we wouldn't be able at all to perform this activity. So here at 5-6 o'clock in the morning, I was working online with our accountant and we pay the salaries to our people, at least that they may have something and go quickly to ATM and take this money and to have some cash with them. Because no one knows what to do, where to run, and what you will need to do. After that, of course, we were trying to have be in touch with our sites, affiliated sites, PIs, where they are, what they're going to do. Of course, everything was stopped. The industry stopped activities quickly. Perhaps you heard about this situation from other people from Ukraine, and it was that really it was the silence death around us for the first maybe even a month, not even weeks, but the first month. And so next steps of our activities there were to manage our patient maybe relocation or continuation of some treatment from the clinical research. We managed to relocate 14 patients from Ukraine to Pratia sites in Poland, and it was also a long process with these preparations, working with sites, PIs on the territory of Ukraine, making notifications to our regulatory authorities. So then thanks to Polish Association of Clinical Researchers and good clinical practice, a new amendment to current regulation of clinical trials on the territory of Poland was published, and it allows patients to be relocated and to start participation or to continue participation in the same trial, but on the territory of Poland. And we were lucky that in our on our sites in Pratia, Poland, we have Ukrainian-speaking doctors who are now working as doctors in Poland. And due to these regulations, it allows to have this bilingual staff, research staff, who can perform patients' visits, signing of ICF, and so on. So this was one of our activities performed during the first, let's say, months of the war, of the finding this patient and trying to help them. In parallel, we paid for the first 3 months the spare salaries for each our employee, like the full salary that they can receive. I didn't also mention at the beginning that our main business, and I'm from Kharkiv, the city that is the closest city to our neighbors and the city that is bombed each day till now without any stops. And some of my employees still stay in Kharkiv and they were not able to go somewhere. Some of them lost their homes and we made such a decision to allow them to live in our hospital because our clinic, Pratia Clinic Ukraine, has inpatient and outpatient departments, so with wards for patients. And now some of my staff people, they're living in our clinic instead of their ruined and damaged homes. And this was also one of the actions to make some support for them.
It seems like you kind of prioritized what you could do, what you could control, looking after your people, making sure that you were sticking to regulations and just kind of just getting on with things as you could. It sounds like a similar story to that we spoke to Yuri Lebedz about, Adam, if you recall. And it looks like you were going to pitch in with something there. I don't know whether it's the same thing that you were thinking.
Yeah, there are a couple of points, and thank you, obviously, Anna, for taking the time to explain that. I think you know, the logistical side of work seems to pale into insignificance, though, when you're talking about the personal cost, doesn't it? Because, you know, you described to us your approach that you've taken to work, but, you know, from a personal level, it must have been absolutely unbelievably traumatic. That's certainly what, you know, the story that we've heard from Yuri firsthand in the two conversations that we've had with him. But also, I'm aware of, you know, the unsettling nature of people relocating families in different parts of Europe and the globe, those that could leave the country. Was that something that crossed your mind? And, you know, from a personal point of view, where were you? You know, where did that leave you on a personal level?
About me personally, the war started for me being 500 kilometers from my family. I was in Kyiv on the medical summit. It was like an annual big medical summit where I should represent Bratia to speak about our business, about our activities. And normally I left my home on Wednesday on the 23rd of February and should return back on the 25th of February from Kyiv to Kharkiv back. And yeah, it was such a gap, let's say, between my family and me, and we were thinking about how to meet each other. The first my thought was that I need to return back home, because as for each of the person, maybe our homes, it's our fortress, it's the place of safety for you, and sure. Couldn't imagine that it might be on another way for you. And for me, the first idea was somehow to reach Kharkiv, because at 4:45, all connections, all roads, they were blocked. Any trams, any buses, nothing that can go somewhere from one city to another. So for me, the main idea was, okay, I need somehow to get home because it's safe. I left the safe home and I need to go to the same home as well. But yes, the first day passed and I was trying to search for some connections, transport connections to reach Kharkiv, and the situation was escalating and escalating, especially in Kharkiv with these new bombs, new shellings. My daughter, she was crying there. She was afraid of all of this because the walls were trembling, the windows were trembling in our flat. And in the evening, we decided that perhaps my husband needs to try to take her and come to Kyiv, so go somewhere more to the middle part of Ukraine or west part of Ukraine, looking at the situation. So this was our decision, and he was crossing this distance between cities, and we met at night. But it was also like the idea maybe to stay for one day or two somewhere in Kyiv, but the next stage was the coming of the Russian troops to Kyiv, because was the main their goal to do during the first 3 days of their invasion on the territory of Ukraine. And yeah, we understood when we met finally, it was also very scary and very awful, because we do not know whether it would be possible, because it was during this bombing on the roads and everywhere. We decided to go somewhere more west, at least from Kyiv. So through tanks that were already in the city and through all of this military equipment and machines, we went from Kyiv to slowly. It was the cure of these machines, of cars on the roads. Maybe you also saw that.
You were sharing the road with tanks and big military vehicles with your family and trying to get through all of that. That must have just been a strange situation, Anna. I guess, you know, it's not what anyone's been used to. Thanks for explaining all of that. And how do things look now? So look, we're kind of a year on from that point. A lot of this, certainly in the UK, has kind of, it's come off the news a lot now, hasn't it, Adam? It's not as publicized. But I know just from dealings and speaking to yourself that it's still ongoing. Business is ongoing, but how has things been different? How has it been, you know, conducting day-to-day business? Because there's still stuff going on. You know, what goes on in your head when you think, I'm going to work today to do X, Y, and Z, you know, for my site management organization, but the other side of your head is thinking, there's still a war going on. It could still impact my family. How do you deal with that? Talk us through what that's like.
I can tell you that we used to survive in this situation. Physically, morally, mentally, because it's our now reality. And in any case, you need to understand that you haven't got another choice. You haven't got any other way. You haven't got any other allowance not to do it and not to continue. And perhaps that's the main that gives us this strength, maybe hope, enthusiasm to continue and to work and to live in general. So,
and does this go for kind of across the board? Is this, you know, we're talking about clinical research in your business, but is this, you know, across all industries, or have, you know, certain industries and sectors shut down more? What's the general lie of the land in terms of people doing business in Ukraine at the moment?
I know that at the beginning it was the same collapse for each industry in general. Yeah. And after that, everyone started to crawl slowly from all of these disasters and how it would be possible for each company, for each business to survive. I may tell you from my point of view and from my experience in clinical research, we even manage now to continue clinical research that were ongoing for this period of time on the territory of Ukraine. And some of, even in Kharkiv, because the majority of our sites, they were in Kharkiv, and patients who were in clinical researches, they continue their participation. We received this allowance from sponsor, from CRO. Thank you very much for this opportunity. And we have this delivery of IMPs. Of course, it was like remote visits, not the on-site visits, but our study coordinators, they managed to sent to meet with patients and go to their homes and to give them IMP to continue treatment. Our patients, they were so, maybe I was also lucky, maybe I will repeat it again, but they were so responsible for this activity. They were even filling their year diaries during all of this period of time in bomb shelters, during this sirena sounds, blackouts now, and we have the compliance in the end receiving from our CRO representative from a CRA, 85% in average from all the patients. So you can imagine how responsibly they were thinking about their participation in clinical researches. So I know that many other sites on the territory of Ukraine, they were also manage their activities. Some of them relocated to another cities from East to Central or Western Europe or Ukraine. Some of them continue performance as remote visits if they receive this allowance as well. So now all of the hospitals and sites, they have generators, Starlinks or some, this more stable internet connections, even during this blackout. So in general, if to compare the situation and the preparation and readiness of the site to perform clinical researches in March, let's say 2022, and now in February 23, it's much more higher and much more with a bigger quality, let's say, than it was in March 2022, because we prepared for all of this uncertainty, for all of these unexpected situations that might happen. And in any case, our industry, they need clinical researchers. We need work to continue to work and to participate. Our patients, they need these drugs. Our doctors, they need clinical researchers to continue their work in the research, in clinical research industry, and the whole industry, it needs money for our economy, even Ukrainian one.
So it seems like, as much as it's certainly not been ideal, in fact, very far from it, everyone involved, both from your end, from the patients, you know, to hospitals, people putting the generators in, everyone has just kind of made do it and got on and done what they have been able to do, which makes me feel a little bit ashamed of my own behavior at times, where I'm complaining about the Wi-Fi or my computer not working correctly over here in the UK, where I want to throw it out the window, that you folks are just getting on with things amidst, you know, the still ongoing chaos. Look, I guess on a personal level, Anna, what do you think that you've maybe learned about yourself throughout this journey? Because it seems that for you and Yuri, who we've also spoke to in the UK, it's been, Adam, do you think, kind of that head down mentality, hasn't it? Of like, this is what we've got to do. Let's get the tunnel vision on it. If we need to outsource stuff to other countries, we'll do it. If we need to register a company in another country, we will do it. If we need to work through blackouts and, you know, get increased engagement from patients, we will do it. You know,
absolutely. I hear unbelievable resilience in you, Anna, and I also wanted to say, you know, I know you, there were initially options to leave the country as a, you know, as a parent and a woman, weren't there? And that may well have, I don't know whether that option landed for you, but you know, from a personal point of view, by no means to make this about my own situation, but my wife for the last year has also been helping Ukrainian women and families in a local village here. So she's had direct contact with many of your contemporaries and hearing their personal stories as well, you know, the reasons they left the country as opposed to staying in the country and dealing with that has also been incredibly informative. And as I say, from a personal point of view, it's fascinating to hear your story as much as it is to hear the story of the people who've traveled and are trying to make a life outside of Ukraine or potentially go back at a later point. I'm fascinated to hear your thoughts around that because, you know, it really is so challenging on so many levels, as you say, James.
Mm. Yeah, I'm going to tell you that everyone can make this choice. And in any case, each person can make the contribution into this, our common victory in the end. It will come in any case, we believe in it, and it will definitely come. And we're helping from different parts, from different sides, like the whole industries inside Ukraine, not only these clinical researchers. And even if it's possible to make the small contribution yet into the common goal that we're now struggling and on the battlefield, our soldiers and everyone is risking their lives on the territory of Ukraine. So we can do something good in this. So this is maybe the main, and I believe that each person knows this, understands it doesn't matter where he or she is now. So it's like this unity, it's the spirit of Ukrainian people, thanks to you, again, to you people from outside of Ukraine who help us to build this spirit, Ukrainian spirit, everywhere in the world, and it helps, and it will definitely help to
and I think that's a key point, you know, that without being political about it, and we don't get political, but you know, the point is that there is enormous support outside of your borders, and I hope that comes across not just in what we're saying, but what you see through media and other channels, and certainly through clinical research. I get that as well, you know, being very closely embedded in the clinical research work myself, so you know, I know how on a daily basis that impacts all of us, but I do hope that comes across in certainly in this conversation, but also in the correspondence that you have outside of Ukraine as well.
Yeah, it's the main message from my industry, from our industry with you, that we need just to have this message to everyone that yeah, Ukraine is still alive. It should be on the map of clinical researchers, on the world map of clinical researchers. We deserve, our people deserve to have clinical trials on the territory of Ukraine. Mm. Now our patients need this even more than before because yeah, we have the lack of medicines, the lack of maybe some medical care due to this internal even relocation of patients and of displaced people inside Ukraine. And yeah, our economy needs some financial support that way it will be conducted clinical researches. So yeah, this is the main message from, I believe, from everyone, from each industry to the whole world, that and from our side as well. So we need to make this few steps, at least to speak, to say that it's not the black hole. It's alive people, it's alive country, and it's alive industry inside.
Well, it's good to have you on to share that, Anna. So it's, I mean, very positive message from your end. And look, I guess speaking about, I guess, moving forward, like it's clear that, it's not necessarily business as usual, but business is ongoing. If people need work doing there, they can still speak to you. You know, what are your plans, both personally and as a business, Pratia, to, you know, over the next 6 months, is there going to be anything that's going to change? Is there going to be any new offerings? Is there going to be kind of any diversification in any way? What is the next, you know, what does the roadmap look like?
You know, I like such a phrase, a dream written down with a data becomes a goal. A goal split into steps becomes a plan. A plan fueled by actions makes that dream become a reality. And this, my dream is now, because in this our reality, perhaps we should have dreams. We cannot come maybe for some exact plans. We do not know what to expect from outside that may come to our country. But of course, we should and must have those dreams. And yeah, my dream, it was even at the beginning of building our company on the territory of Ukraine to expand our activities. So in any case, I'm working now with many other research sites, experience, and experience of the territory of Ukraine, speaking about their willingness and desire to participate in clinical research. So even when we will come to this stage, our industry should be ready to accept clinical researches on the territory of Ukraine. Someone needs to continue this work because of a lot of changes was done and will be done inside research teams, inside everywhere. And as my mission and our main activity is working with sites, finding new sites, enlarging this network of sites on the territory of Ukraine. So now I see this my goal that's coming from my dream to work with new people, to engage them in clinical research industry, to give them this hope and new ideas and maybe vision of their another part of their activities besides only medical, for example, part as yes, doctors in private clinics. And of course, to start maybe some clinical researches during this awful situation, to find some sponsors, to find some proposals that may lead to new studies, even on a small number of sites with few maybe patients randomized. But in any case, to show that everything is possible even during this reality, because we do not know when, where, and what message will wake up people next time at 4:45 a.m. in the morning. But this example and this case of Ukraine should be like a message to everyone throughout the world that you are not alone in your grief. Whatever could come, you may have this light in the end of the tunnel. You might have the support from your industry, and in our case, from clinical research industry, to continue your life and to have the goal why you need to live here, to work, and to survive.
Awesome stuff. Well, look, you've wrapped that up very nicely there, Anna, and I think that's, you know, a great way to kind of bring us towards the end of the show. But before we let you go, look, we always finish the show with kind of a quick fire questions round. So look, I'll kick us off with this, and yeah, I guess that I've just, before we even get into this, I just want to say thanks very much for the positivity that you brought, the insights that you've given us about how business is still very much going in the Ukraine, and that you're still striving to get things done and, you know, drive the clinical research world forward. But look, in terms of our quick fire questions, let me get you going with this, and I'll just ask about the one piece of advice that you perhaps give to your younger self, Anna.
Believe in yourself and never give up. In any circumstances, in any obstacles, when your world is collapsing around you, when you have lost everything that you had, but you need to believe in your forces and everything will come back on track.
Absolutely. Top stuff.
That's wonderful. Is there a particular book or a resource that you go to that you would share with our listeners, perhaps, that's given you inspiration or that you would recommend?
I can't tell you that I have one for the book, but I like, for example, Robert Kiyosaki, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. It's Carol Dweck about mindset, the new psychology of success. It's Stephen Covey, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. So yeah, there are a lot of them. Yeah, this one of my favorite ones.
I like that. I feel like you're reading off my personal library there, Anna. Very, very good. And look, in terms of, you know, Pratia or other companies that you've been with, in terms of, it's clear, very clear about your values and positivity and mindset, but what are the top three qualities that you value most when building that team around you?
Honesty, trust, and responsibility. And it should be mutual in your business, inside your team, like your employer and employees. So if you have this honesty to to perform some activities. After that, you will have this trust, the trust from your side to your employees, for example, to your partner, to perform some activities, and it will be a good collaboration. It will be the same to your side. And if you have this honesty and trust, it requires from you responsibility from your actions, your words, your promises, and your deals.
Love it.
That's amazing. What is your favorite thing outside of work when you're not working, as it sounds like you do quite a lot of?
Traveling. I visited more than 40 countries, around 200 cities. And for me, this is a new discovery of myself.
Wow, incredible. Amazing. Trying to push you on that traveling piece, Anna, just because you've got me interested. I'm going off pace with the quick fire questions around here. Is there any that really stand out, city or country?
London.
Oh, yay. There you go. Playing the game here, isn't she, Anna? Playing the game like that. And look, finally, to bring us to a close, Anna, what would you say is your number one golden rule for both life and for business?
It's better to aim at the perfect and not hit than to aim at the imperfect and hit.
Oh, I like it. I feel like you're an inspirational speaker waiting to hit YouTube, Anna, with some of these gems that you've dropped with us today. But look, Anna, I just want to say thanks once again for joining Adam and I on the show. I know that you and I are connected via LinkedIn. Typically, that is the best way to get hold of our guests. But look, for anyone wanting to learn more about you, what you're doing as an organization, Pratia, et cetera, where else should we be looking? What's the best way to get hold of you?
I'm on LinkedIn. Yeah, I had this, my email address, so I can provide it to you if it will be good to post it as well.
Awesome stuff. Well, look, thanks very much for being a part of the show. We will keep in touch, but for now, I'll let you enjoy the rest of your evening.
Thank you very much. And next time we will speak about peaceful and prosperous Ukraine.
100%.
Thank you.
Brilliant. Thanks, Anna.